Rabbi, how are thee?
We are great. We are great.
Oh, we. So now you got some royalty going?
No, I can speak for you.
Oh, we are great. Okay. We are great. Okay, I said, how are you? And you said, I don't want to do this by myself. You just made it a plural thing.
Or maybe I was just talking the royal we.
Oh, okay. We'll find out. Yeah. Miggity Mike, what do you think here as our favorite agnostic?
I think everything's great.
Okay, cool. So if Miggity Mike is good, the rabbi is good, I'm good, well, then we don't need to talk about therapy because we're all good.
But, you know, I love the ability to use our platform to look at, is religion in need of therapy?
Is it? Oh, that's good. Hey, Miggity Mike, can we make that the title of the show today?
Yeah, we can, because that's deeper than what I was going to go with.
What were you going to go with?
Everything's fine.
Like a good agnostic. Everything's fine. What are we worried about? Yeah. We're good.
Yeah, what's going
on? God, no God, whatever. Everything's cool. We're cool, guys, right? Chill out, everyone. My gosh. Yeah, so does religion need therapy? So we should probably bring on an expert because, I don't know, I ain't a therapist, even though sometimes people try to call me one as a priest. Do people ever try to get you to put you in a therapy chair?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, it's for real. It's a thing that happens as clerics. We need to be well aware of it when we are overkicking our coverage, as they say.
And I think also to recognize the signs of how far am I able to help before I need to be able to refer to somebody like a licensed, trained,
yeah.
As our guest will appropriately say, you know, a well-trained therapist.
Yeah, so we have today a real treat. Dr. Reef Karim is joining us, who is a bit of a celebrity, if I do say so myself. You've seen him on Oprah. You've seen him on Dr. Phil, Dr. Oz, a bunch of other TV stuff. He's your go-to guy when it comes to psychiatry, also for relationships, drug addiction. So he's going to come on and talk to us about how do these two worlds intersect, faith and therapy. What's the history there? What are his thoughts on that? How can there be better collaboration? And more than that. So we're going to get into that and also talk about how have a priest and a rabbi, how have we been trained or lack of training of knowing how to work with therapy? And do we even have our own therapists with all the stuff that's going on? Mm-hmm. That's coming your way on this Christmas special, but there's nothing Christmassy about this and nothing Hanukkah-y about this. This is just a priest and a rabbi talking about therapy and an agnostic saying everything's okay.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin. This is A Priest and a Rabbi. Father Christian, I'm here from St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart, Florida. And next to me is the best darn looking rabbi this side of the Jordan River. It is Rabbi Durbin, and he is from Temple Beit Haim. And we will say that, yes, we say a lot of wacky things on here, and don't blame it on our houses of worship. Blame it on us. So, good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning.
How are you, my friend, this morning?
I am super.
Okay, good. Your three little girls didn't keep you up all night?
Two out of three.
Okay. That's better than usual.
Two out of three ain't bad.
Okay, cool.
You use meatloaf.
So, man, have you ever gone to see a therapist?
You know, it's a very interesting concept.
I had a dime.
And I said,
every time the rabbi says it's an interesting concept or it's an interesting notion. Have you kept track of this, Miggity Mike?
It's at 702.
702. Put it on the board. 702. The rabbi starts off his comment with, you know, it's an interesting notion.
I didn't think that this was a priest picks on a rabbi. It's a priest and a rabbi.
I had one of our fans actually point that out to me one time. They're like, yeah. They're like, because I said it to him one time. He was talking to me. I'm like, well, you know, it's an interesting concept. He goes, wait a minute, the rabbi's rubbing off on you. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, I listen to your podcast and when I run, and he's
so saying, let me say two things. One, as just a non sequitur here, so every morning I have the very fortunate opportunity of taking all three of my kids to school. So I drop the two off at elementary school, and I take my youngest to the temple. And we have this tradition, which is I take her every morning to Dunkin' Donuts. I'm a big Dunkin' Donuts fan.
Can you at least get some sponsorship here, buddy?
If corporate is listening, please support the show.
That's true. You got to write them and tell them who you are.
So I'm driving through, and we don't have a lot of time. So instead of going in, we went through the drive-thru. So I do our regular order. I get an iced coffee. My youngest gets munchkins. And as I'm about to pay, and I roll down the window, the cashier at Dunkin' Donuts goes, "Oh my, I know you." I was like, "Oh, okay." And she goes, "I used to work at St. Mary's, and Father Christian is my priest. And I love your radio show."
Boom.
I thought, wow, amazing.
Yep.
Amazing.
Did she say it was an interesting concept or an interesting notion?
No, she said it was an eye-opening notion for her.
Awesome.
So to go back on the therapy, which I think is actually really, really important. You know, in rabbinical school, when I went to rabbinical school in London, it was required for us to take therapy. And I am a very firm believer that unless I can counsel myself, how am I able to counsel others who come in search of meaning or in search of, spiritual guidance? So, you know, therapy, I think, is actually terribly important. And I think we have to remove the stigma of perhaps of what therapy used to be, of in terms of, you know, what's wrong with me, or, well, I guess that's the whole point of therapy, but the idea of one's family, of digging deep in terms of, I was never given this, or I wasn't given that, you know, it from a behavioral standpoint or an analytical standpoint.
Well, sometimes when you want to deal with the skeletons in your closet, that at least for my mother's generation, when my mother went to the program, that was a big deal in the family. You know, we're from a Lebanese family. You don't talk about that. You don't. That means you're coming out and saying, "Yeah, I'm an alcoholic," right? And so she's 30 years sober, but still, that's still kind of this weird taboo thing. And that, at the same time, it was the same thing of going to a therapist. I mean, you've got problems. Mm-hmm. But now, I don't know. I mean, I came from Los Angeles, where everyone had a therapist, so it was cool. It was in. But still, I think out here, it's still a little weird to say you have a therapist. And then on top of that, you and I. You know, have the conversation. This is why we want to bring on our guest today, is how does it shake hands with your religious practice? Can they shake hands together? Do you need to go see a Christian counselor, or can you go see a secular therapist who knows how to speak faith language, or do you just leave faith out of it altogether? Can the two work hand in hand? So I'm curious about that conversation as well, to know, what does an expert think about religion as we're going to bring on a psychiatrist here, and what do they think about religion's role in therapy overall? Mm-hmm. Where do they collide? Where's the tension? And what's the neuroscience behind it? Because I think we'll have some good data as well.
So you know, one of the questions I have, you know, for you is, when you went through seminary, mm-hmm. was it expected upon you? Was it required in terms of, you know, outsourcing yourself to other therapists to kind of get to know Father Anderson and kind of work through some of those challenges?
Right.
I mean, from a rabbinical perspective, at least I can speak from the European and certainly the American model, is that therapy is something that, unless you can counsel yourself, how can you counsel others who are coming in for, you know, seeking guidance? I mean,
and you know what the truth is, man. Maybe you could say this about every industry, but my gosh, man, in seminary there are people who bring in some serious baggage.
Sure,
some serious baggage where you're just like, I really hope you deal with that before you get out into the field. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't required. What was required was a spiritual director. So you work with a spiritual director who's going to be coaching you, working through your own spiritual life, your prayer life, okay, meditation, et cetera, et cetera. And it wasn't until I got to this diocese here in Southeast Florida, where the bishop here requires every single clergy person to have a therapist. And if you can't afford that, then let the diocese mm-hmm. know, they'll help you. Mm-hmm. Because we also had a priest take his life 2 years ago. And so he was like, listen, Let me know. Let's get ahead of this. And I'm here for you. Because, as you know, as a clergy person, if you already got your own stuff going on, and then you spend your day dealing with everyone else's stuff, and some pretty dark stuff as it is, plus a lot of loss, a lot of death, a lot of just things that can add a lot of despair to you. If you can't be the light of hope in the midst of all that chaos, and you sink into the chaos, that's when it can get pretty scary. So, all right, let's today we are talking about does religion need therapy? That was an awesome title that our beloved rabbi came up with yesterday while we were on the phone with our incredible guest. You've probably seen Dr. Reef Karim on TV at some point. He has been on Dr. Oz. He's been on Oprah. He's been on Anderson Cooper. He has been on Dr. Phil. And now he's on A Priest and a Rabbi. So he's really made it. He's finally arrived, I think, on the scene when he made it to A Priest and a Rabbi.
Oprah. Then the doors open up for A Priest and a Rabbi.
A Priest and a Rabbi. I mean, she's just really just been... We've been really good to her. We've allowed her to really just move up the ladder. And so we're just happy to be working with Oprah a lot. So Dr. Reef Karim is a psychiatrist. He has started his own clinic at one point and explored very holistic ways, not only just using Western ways of approaching a therapy and a medication, but also having an open mind for creative ways and different modalities. He has worked in sports psychology, relationships. He's an author. He's also just a really good guy, a Renaissance man, and we are happy to have him here. And he's also has a background in entertainment as well. And I met this guy in the nightclub world in Los Angeles, believe it or not. Dr. Reef Karim, welcome to A Priest and a Rabbi.
Hey, Priest and Rabbi, how are you guys doing?
Super.
Hey, brother. So listen, I know you're out in Los Angeles, and so it is pretty darn early out there. So we thank you for just getting out of your large king size bed there in Santa Monica, California, and arriving here on the show.
Well, like you guys said, I feel like I've officially made it, so it was worth waking up at 5 a.m. to make this happen.
Yeah, so you know, when Oprah calls us, we always want to do her a favor, and when she said, "Hey, can you get my guy on the show?" We called Miggity Mike, our producer. He's our favorite agnostic, and he hooked it up. So, Mike, thank you for taking that phone call.
You know, it was very hard work, but I'm glad we got it done.
Yeah, we got it done. So Dr. Reef, you know, so we've set up this show that it's going to be about how does religion need therapy? And you're going to be, you know, you're the guy to go to, because not only are you a psychiatrist and you have this huge psychological background, but you have a really keen spiritual sense to yourself as well. So can you just tell us a little bit about yourself to our viewers before we dig in?
Yeah. So I am, I'm from the Midwest. That's how I know Christian. I'm Indian, and I was raised in a very conservative Indian environment, which was super medical. My dad's a scientist. My mom's a nurse. I'm the eldest son in this Indian family. So when I pop out, they're like, literally, my dad made an announcement on the day I was born. He said, "Okay, everyone, gather around. I've decided he will be a doctor." And like, there was this big moment and everyone's clapping. And it's like my life was planned for me from the day I was born. And every Halloween, they dressed me up as a different type of doctor. Every birthday, I got a medical gift. For your fifth birthday, we got you a personal defibrillator. Use this on your classmates who are having heart trouble. Like, it was like crazy medical pressure.
And indoctrinated.
And I was a creative kid. And it was like being an alien in this family because they didn't know what to do with me. Because I thought out of the box, I was very different in the way that I related to the world. My family is incredibly spiritual, and I've been reading various poets and reading various spiritual leaders, and I was raised on Rumi. Essentially, I was reading Rumi when I was young, and I've been able to witness the changes in our culture and in our society. So, you know, to make my parents happy, I became a physician. I got double boarded in psychiatry and addiction medicine. I have a specialty in relational therapy and neuroscience. Served as an assistant professor for many years at UCLA, and then decided that I wanted to be able to help people in a treatment center space. I wanted to develop a curriculum, a philosophy, and how to help people heal for people that are having any kind of mental health issue, addiction or self-sabotage issue, or somewhat of a relational problem in their life. And so I opened up a treatment center in Beverly Hills in LA and had a very strong Eastern-Western philosophy to it, where spiritual therapy and existential therapy was just as important, if not more, than psychological medicine or pharmacology or neuroscience or anything else. And I learned a lot about people at that time, because you can have the best medications in the world. You could have the best research in the world. You could have the best therapy, cognitive behavioral, dialectical behavioral. I can throw all these words at you about all the different types of therapies you could put on somebody. But if they don't feel that they're worthy or have permission or can overcome their shame to lead a healthy, good life, they will keep falling into the blocks, the obstacles, the relapse, the negativity, the baggage that they come in with. And they won't change because they're habituated to certain patterns that usually come from your childhood that they don't feel they're worthy. And so I then looked at our culture and society right now, and we're in a very different type of culture. We're in this motivational, entrepreneurial, life coach culture. And I felt like, you know, I've been helping people one-on-one with a team in a treatment center, but I think I could best serve people by being out there in regards to messaging and taking my background in neuroscience and personal development and mental health and connecting it with media and messaging and performance. Because I've had the opportunity to, you know, host television shows and act and do improv and write and be creative. And by connecting those two, I feel like I can best help people to not just destigmatize mental health, but to help people innovate and expand their minds and focus on human potential instead of just pathology. So I'm out there now focusing on coaching people, focusing on speaking, focusing on developing a talk show, and just finding ways of disseminating information to people to help them lead better lives.
So you really don't do much, and you think less, and you kind of just sit around and play video games. It sounds pretty much like your MO, but so
yeah, I try. Go ahead.
Yeah, so for our rest of us plebeians, we are going to – it's good to have you on the show, brother. You inspire us. So here's a question, since you're surrounded by a priest and a rabbi here. Let's get right to it. Let me start this over. You know, I was reading in Psychology Today that there historically has been a little bit of tension between therapy or psychology and religion, where they quoted Freud as Freud saying religion is, I mean, it was just some negative quote where he thought it was all a bunch of BS, some kind of neuroses. And it wasn't, you know, they walked through the different major psychological thought leaders of getting to Maslow of saying, you know, this is good. Religion is good. Religion can actually help people to find some healing and some clarity. What are your thoughts of where we're at now, that in just the therapy that's available to the everyday seeker, can these two be held hand? Should they be held hand in hand? Let's start there. Do you think therapy and religion should be held hand in hand, or should they kind of be? Are they better when they're separate?
Well, I think this is a long-standing debate of science versus religion, and for the most part, you'll see many, many scientists that are evidence-based have a really hard time with faith. And the concept of faith is hard to measure in a scientific way. So it's harder for a lot of scientists to see the value and the potency of being a strong faith-based person. People that are really faith-based believe in something beyond themselves and something beyond measure, generally. And so it's easier for them to say, look, I believe in something in my heart, in my soul, in my spirit. This is what I believe. And I don't care if you can't exactly measure it. This is still what I believe. So there's always been this longstanding kind of debate between the two. I happen to be somebody that believes the integration of community support with a faith-based mentality combined with the best of science makes a better person. Because if you look at some of the studies on the human development studies, the psychological studies on prayer and faith-based healing, there's decently strong evidence that if you believe, like there was one study where they took people in the ICU and the CCU, the coronary intensive unit, and they looked at one group of people that were not prayed for. They just kind of went into the coronary unit without knowing other people were looking out for them. And they had another group that was prayed for, and the patients knew they were being prayed for. So all it was they knew there were other people that were praying for them. That group that knew they were being prayed for did quite a bit better in regards to the result of how stable they were, how quickly they moved past the intensive care unit, how quickly their ejection fraction and other measures of their cardiovascular system improved. They just did better. They've done other studies where they've looked at life expectancy or life satisfaction in regards to the way they stratified this is they had some people that didn't believe in religion at all, some people that believed in religion but didn't go to church or temple very often. They had some people that went, a couple times a month, and then they had people that were once a week or more. And the people that were once a week or more outlived pretty significantly the people that didn't believe in religion or didn't go very often. And they had better lives. They were part of a community. They were people that were more tied into prevention. People would help them if they had people they could turn to. They had a rabbi or a priest or someone else that was looking out for them, and they could go and turn to them. So I think the data from a science perspective is actually really helpful to understand that faith, spirituality, and religion can actually be good for you.
You know, we've seen studies in the past where when one engages in prayer, that the neurological receptors in the brain that actually calms one down through that whole process in terms of, relieving stress and anxiety and as you said, just being healthier and just being in a better mode as we access. Just a interesting kind of concept.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good research on meditation specifically for brain changes. There's a Harvard study that looked at cortical thickening, and that when you meditate, you can, especially in older people, you can actually increase gray matter in the brain. Your brain actually gets bigger. You also can change your GABAergic neurotransmitter system. GABA is an inhibitory neurotransmitter, and when you take a Xanax or a Klonopin or an Ativan or a Valium to get, to chill out and to decrease anxiety, you access that GABA system. You enhance that neurotransmitter system. Well, you also enhance that system by meditating. You can enhance that system by yoga. You can enhance that system by prayer and focused prayer. So, yeah, there are definite correlates or connections between our brains, our neurotransmitter systems, and our ability to sit down, to focus, to pray, to believe in something beyond ourselves.
So let's flip this around look at it from the other way, which is in houses of worship, often there's also tension with therapy. You explored and talked about why, maybe from a science perspective, there could be that tension with religion. Religion also struggles with therapy, depending on which community you're in. And it has been just pray your way through it. Just rely completely on God. Put all your trust in God. And a lot of times we see that can be often dangerous. And over the last, I think it was five years ago, we saw one of the leaders of the Christian evangelical movement currently, Rick Warren, his son, took his life from depression. And that awakened really the evangelical world to say, you know, we need to talk about mental illness more. And I think it's a struggle that, as I can only speak from a Christian perspective, is that I think there's this radical obedience and devotion to God, saying God can do all things. And so if I go to a therapist, maybe I'm saying that I can't get it right with God and I need some extra help or something. And I don't know if there's a fear of I'm just not trusting enough or I don't have enough faith. And why would I need a therapist? I don't know if it's just becoming from a culture, or maybe there's different cultures that still don't accept the idea of therapy. That's a weakness. But, you know, it's unfortunate that it takes usually a loss of life, something pretty dramatic to awaken a group of people or to get a different shift on it. But what are your takes on that, Dr. Reeve, on why you think certain religious groups really struggle with inviting therapy to be sort of a complement to our own healing, especially when we're dealing with mental illness that could really be robbing us of our livelihood and joy?
Well, I think we have to look at the definition of what mental health is. Like people look at that term mental or the term mental illness, and they freak out, and they're like, wow, I don't want to be labeled with that. Mm-hmm. Like, that means I'm crazy, or that means there's something wrong with me. And especially it's scary because you don't understand it. If you have a leg injury or an arm, you have a broken arm from playing basketball or doing something. You have a broken arm. You get a cast. You go to your doctor. You go to the hospital. The ER. They do something for you. You put a cast. You have a time limit. You know that you're going to be healed after a certain time period. People look at you and they feel bad. They're like, oh, man, I'm sorry that happened to you. It's relatable. People can sign your cast. They can be part of the community, part of what you're going through. You have support that's overt. It's obvious. And you heal. When you have a mental health issue, and I like the word like mental health issue rather than specifically mental illness, because our mental health is on a spectrum. You can be in a really good place. You could be in a really bad place. And it vacillates. You might win the lottery and feel amazing and have the man or woman of your dreams and have a completely healthy, wonderful relationship. Or you could lose your lottery ticket. You could end up having a problem where they leave you. And you could have all sorts of issues, and you're the same person. It's called life. And mental health is an aspect of our living, as is physical health. And when I'm sizing somebody up, meaning I'm working with them, or I'm coaching them, or, you know, I'm trying to figure out a problem, I do investigation work. And that investigation work looks at the biological aspect of somebody, the psychological aspect of somebody, the social aspect of somebody, and the spiritual aspect of somebody. Biological is what is going on with their medical body. You know, what is happening to them physically? What is happening to them from a neurobiology perspective? Psychological is, you know, what is their mental health like? Where are they at with their mental health? Social is what's happening to them socially. What is their support network? What are their relationships like? How do they deal with life from an emotion perspective? You know, do they have a lot of stressors going on in their life? And their spiritual life is, what do they believe in? how do they connect with themselves, with others, with a higher power, with the world around them? What do they believe their purpose is in life? What is their mission in life? You know, are they what are they driven by? What do they value? So when you look at mental health, you don't have that cast on that arm. You don't have an obvious way that people can rally around you. Most people that have a mental health issue isolate as opposed to seek help. They usually try to keep it a secret. They're, the whole concept of depression, a big part of it, is being isolated and not wanting to get out of bed and not wanting to talk to people. It's the opposite of reaching out to people. When you're extremely anxious, you might reach out to people in a very needy way, or you might try to self-medicate that anxiety because it's really debilitating. And that's why you see so many people that pop pills, and we have a huge prescription drug problem. That's why you see so many people that drink, or you know, they try to numb out their feelings and their symptoms when they're struggling. And so in regards to the church or the temple or the mosque or any kind of faith-based, you know, religious institution, there's a fine line between I've worked with you know, religious leaders in the past, and they'll come to me and say, look, I've got these individuals that I'm working with, and I feel like my job as a leader in the church or the temple or the mosque is to help the people that come to me to listen, to try to provide some guidance. And that guidance is probably going to have a lens of religion in it and faith in it, because that's why I dedicated my life to religion. But I want to know where the fine line is between when I should seek out professional help for the people that I work with. And so I'm often guiding religious leaders on when you should, you know, triage, how you should decide and filter. Okay, I can work with this person to a degree, help them get this off their chest, help them to communicate and to get some basic guidance. But there are matters far beyond what I can do for this person. I mean, look, I trained in psychological medicine, neuroscience, and you know, aspects of the mind-body connection for almost 20 years just in school. I mean, like education, that to understand the human mind, to understand the human body, to understand human behavior, to understand our resistance, our obstacles, our blocks, the defenses we use, how we try to get around looking at ourselves, and to understand the ways that we can get in trouble from a mental health perspective, and our conditioning and our attachment, and how we're raised in our childhood impacts the decisions we make as adults. That is hard training. And it helps me to recognize when somebody has an issue and how they can get help for it.
Dr. Reif, this is great having you on here. We got Dr. Reif on the air here at A Priest and a Rabbi, and we are talking about, does religion need therapy? And we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this thought of what you're talking about right here, of where is that line of when a clergy member can say, you know what, this is now going beyond my pay grade. And we need to invite a team, right? Because I think a lot of times the rabbi and myself are the ones who are suggesting and saying, listen, this is not just a clergy thing. We need to get some heavy lifting here. So we'll talk about that and then get your takes in the second half of the show of where we go to next with this mixture of religion and therapy, and get your thoughts on that. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Reif Karim.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through all the what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. Welcome, everybody, back to A Priest and a Rabbi. This is Father Christian Anderson at St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and right next to me is still the dashing, handsome, so well-loved Rabbi Matthew Durbin. This side of the Jordan River just doesn't get any better than that. So,
what I'm actually going to do is I love our theme music, and if I could have that so that as I walk around town,
yes,
I just hear that beat.
Yes.
I can both walk to the beat.
That's your music video. That's your music. That's the welcome video to Temple Beth Hayam.
Yeah. So I'm actually really, really interested in what you had mentioned just before we got to break.
It's an interesting concept.
Well, I didn't say that.
It's
but
an interesting
I said,
notion. You know, 723.
The idea that, you know, as clergy, you know, we are certainly confronted with and interact with a lot of interaction with a lot of our members to whom are struggling with certain challenges, and the understanding that, you know, for you and for myself, I mean, we're not trained therapists, right? And I think as clergy, there is that understanding that, you know, we can help advise, we can help listen. I think to be that non-anxious, non-judgmental presence. But at what point, you know, for you, Father Anderson, do you make that break to be able to say, look, throughout our counseling sessions, as a priest, and certainly for me as a rabbi, that I now have to refer out.
Sure. And I think that if you're just tuning in right now, we have Dr. Reef Kareem on the show with us, who is a psychiatrist and started his own clinic, and you've seen him all over TV. And we're talking to him about this idea of how do clergy know of to be the ones to suggest and to hand off to do some heavy lifting to a trained therapist, because sometimes clergy, our fellow clergy members, and maybe you and I have been guilty of this at times, where you think you can do it all, mm-hmm. and you can see this person is really trusting you, and you want to invite God into this and really help him through the situation. And I've just learned through, I guess, the years of where that little spidey sense goes off of being like, oh, this is getting into some heavy lifting, and we need to get a team here, and that team needs to be a therapist. And then we become the people who can invite someone who might not be comfortable with hiring someone like Dr. Reef Kareem to say, I do think that we need to, I want to be, this is the line that my boss has given me. I want to be part of your team. We need to get a team around you. I'm more of your spiritual director in all of this, mm-hmm. but we need to invite someone else, like a therapist. And then maybe, oh, no, I don't need a therapist. And you can say, no, I think you do. I think you do. We've been meeting together for a couple times here, and I think it's just part of the team. And you get someone there, and because sometimes you might get pushback.
But why as for one who's seeking, you know, betterment, and just that one phrase that you said, I don't need it. You know, where's that stumbling block? Why is there that stigma towards therapy as opposed to, you know, I'm struggling with something, I'm going to my priest, I'm going to my rabbi and trying to work through some of those challenges with them, as opposed to a trained therapist? It's just a language.
Well, you know, you're right. And you're like, well, if you came to me, why wouldn't you want someone who also has a degree in medicine who can help you even more? But I think they feel more comfortable saying, no, I'll just be here with you. And mm-hmm. that's where you and I, at least, it's nice because it gets your ego going. Like, oh, you'd really trust me. Mm-hmm. You'd rather see me than a therapist. But then you're like, no, I am not a therapist.
But I also wonder how much of it, too, for our membership and for our communities is the understanding that, you know, I go to Father Anderson because you're a priest, you're ordained, and you have the expertise to seemingly help me through my challenges, as opposed to, you know, I'm here for your spiritual formation, I'm here for your growth and your own challenges, but there comes a point where I am just not as effective as a trained psychiatrist,
right? And maybe that's what was practiced in both of our denominations, is where in mine it was Father knows best, right? So the father, the priest, knows best, so you go to him for everything. And if you're in a small town with a parish, the priest is the guy, you go to him for everything. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm hearing, I think, from you and I is that we are getting more and more comfortable in a culture, and hopefully more self-actualized as priests and rabbis and imams, to say, hey, I am part of a bigger team here, and we need to bring in someone like Dr. Reef Kareem. And so, Dr. Reef, there's this diagnostic aspect to this all, where you mentioned triaging, where, you know, Rabbi Durbin and I and our colleagues have to kind of get a sense, and they don't teach us this in seminary, of when to know, like, okay, we're to trust your gut of saying, we're getting a little deeper below the surface. That's not just about your spiritual health here. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting into, how am I helping you deal with how your father, you know, spoke to you badly when you were five, or there was abuse. I want to be there spiritually, but I need to recommend to you this therapist, and let's start working together as a team, right? I mean, I think that's a big part of this partnership, is that we'd have to work together and be aware of it and not try to have a monopoly on healing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be really real here, because I've worked with clergy and I know firsthand some of the issues that have happened.
Bring it, buddy. Bring it.
You don't know what you don't know. So you know some wonderful things in your training, and your ability to help people is you know, prominent. It's important. But you don't know what you don't know. There are so many clergy I've worked with where it was so obvious what the problem was. It was right under their nose, but they didn't know what they didn't know. And there was a suicidal person or a depressed person or somebody with a significant anxiety disorder, or there was domestic violence in the house, or there was OCD or significant ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. There were so many significant things happening, and they didn't see it. They didn't know it because they haven't been trained to recognize it. So the first thing is, you don't know what you don't know. The second thing is, I think mental health training should be a very important and significant part, at least to determine when somebody needs to go seek professional help as part of the training. You know, and another thing it's important to note is that that resistance, I think the rabbi said, like, nah, you know, I don't want to do that. He's correct. Like, that's called resistance. And that resistance is essentially the thought bubble behind that is, nah, I don't want to admit I might have a real mental health problem here. And it's much easier to just talk it out, listen, problem life, issue life, with my rabbi or with my priest.
It's also cheaper. You
know, a well-liked, true, but a well-liked therapist isn't doing a good job. Any therapist you go to where you're like, I love my therapist because they're like a friend that I can talk to and just, you know, really like just open up and talk. Well, that person is functioning then as somebody who's like a listener or maybe a basic counselor. And that's not the role. I know there is something called supportive psychotherapy, but that's really not the role of a therapist. A therapist is there to connect the dots, to challenge you, to help see what the problems are, to look at your patterns of behavior, to analyze, to figure stuff out with you and have you have that light bulb moment, that aha moment go off where you're suddenly like, oh, I get it. I see what I've been doing. And then hopefully to inspire and motivate you to change. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I'll mention is, as much as I respect clergy, you know, there are clergy that are very ego-driven, and they need some humility. And that ego focus is contagious. It's addictive to know that you have the ability to heal and the ability to help people through the journey of life to have more faith, to have to get closer to God, to do something where you can help them improve their life, is very powerful. But you have to have humility. You have to know when you are out of your range, and the fact that there exists an entire field of mental health practitioners who will do a much more effective job than you will helping somebody through a mental health issue or a mental health crisis.
Yeah, that's I totally agree, and I've felt the trap when the first year I was in ministry that people are coming into my office and asking for help and guidance on some pretty heavy issues and be like, wow, I'm in this seat and I'm in this chair. And then you get past that honeymoon and be like, wow, I am out of my gourd here. This is no way I need to get, you know, a team here. But let me ask you this question. Now, I work with, you know, I have a lot of parishioners come in, a lot of people want to come in and get Christian support, spiritual support. And then they want to go, let's say I talk them into go seeing a therapist. And they want a therapist, though, that is going to be able to speak the Christian lingo. And I don't know if, Rabbi, you have this word. If I go see a therapist, I want someone who gets me, who gets my Jewish background, who gets the jargon at least. Maybe they don't have to be – well, it'd be nice if they're Jewish. And I've heard this also from a cultural standpoint, that like from Black Americans being like, the anxieties that I'm dealing with in this world, I don't want to go see some white therapist who just doesn't get it. They'd have never walked in my shoes as a Black American. I'm wondering – what are your thoughts on, so you have this person of faith who's very committed to their faith, who wants to find healing through their faith, but is open, though, to saying, I also need some other heavy lifting here. What do you think? Do you think a secular therapist is best because it's good to get a different point of view? Or should they go to a Christian or a Jewish counselor who also has a degree in therapy? But I'm sure that list is much shorter than just finding any therapist. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the first thing I think is, in this country, there is no shortage of people who are Christian, first off. You know, we're quite a Christian society. And you know, there are definitely Jewish practitioners, Christian practitioners, who maybe don't lead with the fact that they're Jewish or Christian, but they are therapists that know quite a bit of the language and the culture. So that's the first thing, is I don't think it's as rare as you might think. But this concept of culturally focused therapy is something that's real. There's some people that don't feel that they feel very vulnerable going to talk about their mental health. And so they want somebody that speaks the language or has walked in their shoes or at least understands the integration of faith and therapy. So I think it's legitimate. And there are ways you can look up to, you know, you can go online and search for culturally focused therapists, whether it's African-American or it's Jewish or it's Christian or it's, you know, whatever. But by the same token, a really good therapist and a well-trained therapist will know that you speak a certain language and will try to look up, will try to talk to people, and will try to understand your background. Because there's two ways to look at this. One way is, okay, as a therapist, I need to communicate with this person. This person is very religious, Christian-focused, speaks the specific language and comes from a certain culture. So I need to learn some of that to be able to, even whether you're Christian or not, I need to learn some of the culture and the language as a therapist in order to best communicate with this person. That's the first thing, just to make them more at ease and more vulnerable. But the reality is I've treated, you know, personally, I've treated royalty, I've treated NBA athletes, NFL players, I've treated Hollywood starlets, I've treated rock stars, I've treated the homeless, I've treated everybody in between. And our brains are our brains. And our ability to connect from a human perspective and deal with our emotions is universal. So, you know, you can be Christian, Jewish, Muslim, you can be whatever. But your brain is your brain. Mm-hmm. And yes, you may have a specific issue that has a religious undertone, but your problems are still your problems and life is life. And a really good therapist should be able to work through that with you.
No, that's great, doctor. You know, I go see a therapist and I think she also happens to be Christian, but definitely doesn't lead with it, like you said. And so I introduced that into it, like, can we start with prayer? And she's like, sure. And I think she kind of just follows my lead, but I kind of like how she's not leading with Christian principles because, listen, I'm a priest. I don't need any more of, like, I'm coming in here to, like, let my guard down. Mm-hmm. And I just need a therapist, you know, and maybe someone else might disagree and they might want someone who's going to be speaking Christian principles. But like, I just want someone who's going to be straightforward with me, cut to the chase. And like, to your point, just be a darn good therapist who also happens to be a Christian. And that helps because she gets the stuff that I'm talking about and she's not uncomfortable. And I say, can we pray? But you're right. The mind is the mind. So Dr. Reeve, we're coming near the end of the show here. And I can't tell you how wonderful it's been having you on here. And I know that, you know, when we talked yesterday with the rabbi, we wanted to go towards this whole journey of the self-help generation. And so if we would love to have you back on the show to go parse that apart of what does that mean, this generation of life coaches and self-help and how are we using that as our therapy and betterment, and is it making us too selfish or too self-involved as a culture? And we would love to get into that. So
but I also wonder too, in today's culture and our understanding, that it seems like we are much more open to having the conversation as opposed to being very closed.
Sure.
And I think that opening that door and opening that conversation about talking about mental illness, about talking about how we access the deep reserves within ourselves, it just opens the floodgates in order to really start unpacking some of those challenges that a generation ago were seemingly closed.
Absolutely. I mean, doctor, wouldn't you agree with that? That now the future, it's much better as the awareness of mental health and seeking help and assistance is brighter or more aware than we've ever been in this country.
Yeah, I do think we're more aware. I also think we overdiagnose and label and pathologize in ways that we probably shouldn't.
Okay.
I think we rely too much on prescription medication instead of working through things from a spiritual perspective, a psychological perspective, a general mental health perspective. I'm a big believer that we're on a spectrum at all times in life instead of, oh, you're healthy. Oh, you just crossed the line. Now you're pathologic. Now you're unhealthy. Oh, now you need help. You know, there's something wrong with you. I do not believe in labeling or stigmatizing. We're all going through this journey together. My personal belief is that, you know, we're a soul put in a human body raised by people that are just doing their best. And then we spend most of our adult life trying to figure out what was imprinted on us or conditioned on us when we were young and what our mission and purpose is in life. And we're all living that journey. Black, white, Asian, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, it doesn't matter. We're all sharing that together. And our mental health is our mental health. It's something we all are dealing with. And so looking at it from a universal perspective, I think is really helpful. And labeling people and pathologizing people just adds to the stigma. And I've spent a lot of my life in media and in science helping to destigmatize this concept of labeling and feeling vulnerable because you're so worried about shame. This is far beyond shame. This is life. So, you know, I hope that helps understanding the concept.
Very helpful. We're at the end of the show here. So, Dr. Reef, please tell this audience how they can find and learn more about you besides just seeing your beautiful mug on the TV all the time.
Well, they could go to my website. It's reefkareem.com, reefkareim.com. I literally left a treatment center world and, you know, the research and the traditional medical world to be able to give information to people. So I'm going to have a talk show. I'm going to have some courses. There's going to be, you know, weekly newsletters. There's going to be a whole blitz of things. If you go to my website and just type in your name, you'll end up on my list and you can see all sorts of things that are happening in ways that I can help people.
Awesome. Dr. Reef, you're the best, my friend. God bless you. We'll see you soon. And to everyone else, we have an Advent prayer walk. We're walking with 12 other churches this Sunday at 2 p.m. Come join us at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. Let's go walk together in unity. God bless you. Peace.